Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmuck, Lance Mehta with you. 201-939-4513. We'll take your calls early and often during today's show. Coming up at 12:30, we have our continuing series going through the Giant opponents. Only two remaining. We'll be joined by Ray Fittipaldo. He covers the Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and one of the more exciting games we'll have this year. Giants playing the AFC North, and the Lions will be with Paul Dottino and Anita Marks tomorrow. But Lance, the camp is finally here.
Oh, yeah.
The week that the Giants report has arrived. The players come here on Thursdays. They do all their physicals. They do their conditioning test. And then they have their first practice on Friday. It's been a long time coming. Pads won't go on for a few days after they start. So we'll have a little bit of a warm-up period. But finally, we're getting into the season. And the grind begins on Thursday.
And Thursday is when the off-season period completely ends. And we actually start talking about football that is relevant. And roster decisions and practices and so forth. What I think is important to note this year with training camp, John, as opposed to what has transpired with Tom Coughlin in the past, is Ben McAdoo is moving his practices to the morning. So more often than not, it's going to start at 10:40 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where most of the practices will get underway. And, you know, this is a little bit of a different feel from Tom Coughlin. Coughlin also utilized some evening sessions to try to mix it up because the sun, not wanting to obviously kill the players early on in training camp. So that'll have a little bit of a different feel just to see how the players adjust to this. But, you know, it's going to be a grind as it is every offseason. And there's a lot of competition in this year's camp compared to what we've seen perhaps in recent years, because I think the undrafted free agent class that was brought in, John, there's a lot of opportunities all across the board with various positions.
Well, and frankly, regardless of the class, Lance, I just think the way this roster is built right now, there are simply a lot of available spots on the roster. I mean, you go through a lot of these position groups and you have, you know, the top five guys you know, but six or seven or eight, you're like, I'm not sure who these guys are going to be. The O-line, the D-line, secondary. I mean, there are a lot of spots here, linebacker, where you don't know who the final guys at those particular groups are going to be. We'll get into that with you at 201-939-4513. Also, your tweets at hashtag Giants Chat. Want to go through some of the details on training camp before we get into the football stuff. So get on hold. We have only one open line, but if you want to get in, you can, and we will discuss. There are 11 total practices open to the public. Go to Giants.com. The training camp schedule is there. Just Google search Giants training camp schedule. You can find it that way, too. I'll list them for you real quick. As Lance said, every practice starts at 10:40, except for a couple. I'll let you know which ones. All right? These are the days practice is open to the public. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this week. So that's July 29th, 30th, and 31st. Next week, Tuesday, August 2nd. Thursday, August 4th. Friday, August 5th. And Saturday, August 6th. All of those practice times are 10:40. Okay? Then you have four more practices before camp breaks in the middle of August. Monday, the 8th at 11:10. Tuesday the 9th at 10:40, Wednesday the 10th at 10:40, and then Sunday the 14th, that at 11:10. Now, here are some of the rules, folks. There is no admission charge. It's free and open to the public. Show up. You can watch practice. There's limited seating by the practice field, but I got to tell you, they've made a bit of an upgrade on the bleachers this year. You go out there, take a look at it. It's not benches anymore. It's full seats. There are seat backs. There are tents and shade and covering over all of the bleachers, so you're going to be comfortable. There's areas for kids to have some fun. There's autographs for the kids with current players. There'll be Giant Legends signing for everybody, including adults. And I know I've gotten a lot of tweets about why current players cannot sign for adults. And it's a safety issue. Last year, it was well documented in the newspapers. Everyone saw it. There was an issue with Odell Beckham. Fans surged ahead to try to get his autograph, and people almost got hurt. Thankfully, nothing happened. Everyone was fine. But that's the reason for that particular rule this upcoming year. But it really is a great, great, great atmosphere. It'll be a lot of fun. Come down. It's first come, first serve on the seating. So if you want to get here quick. And again, certain players after each practice based on position group will sign. They will not be announced ahead of time, which has been the case in the past. So you don't get a million people trying to go to the same practice. So show up. Kids will sign for current players will sign for kids in the kids zone area. But again, certain position groups will be At each practice, and I think the Giants will announce what legends will be at what practice at some point next few days. That might be they will, right? So that'll get announced sometime soon as well. We'll have that for you right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Did I miss anything?
I was just going to add that the parking lot is going to open an hour before each and every practice, and then the gate will open 30 minutes before practice begins, just in case you're anticipating your schedule plans and so forth.
And I should also point, in case it rains, and that includes rain, wind, thunderstorm, or extreme heat, we're talking, you know, 100-degree humidity, which, based on this past week, is not out of the realm of possibility. Though it does – I'll get to that in a second. But if it does move indoors practice, that is not open to the public. I know it stinks. You show up to watch practice, and then it rains or lightning or thunder, and they have to move inside. For everyone's safety, we can't have you in there. You can't have you out there. There's not a lot of room inside the facility. It's just 100-yard field as opposed to three football fields that they practice on outside. So if practices had to move indoor because of the weather, that gets closed to the public. So full disclosure right off the bat.
Now, if I'm correct, John, I think isn't there contact information or the website that they could go to the morning of just to confirm that practice is still on? I thought the team released that.
Just says, please check Giants.com prior to practice for up-to-the-minute changes on the daily practice schedule. So Giants.com will have it.
Constant updates.
Speaking of weather, Ben McAdoo will be happy that it's supposed to be into the mid-80s by the end of the week. Be a little bit more reasonable. The problem, usually what has to happen for the temperature to drop 10 degrees?
It's got to rain.
And it's supposed to rain potentially Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So the hope is that it's outdoors. If it's just a passing shower, they'll play through that. It's when you get into the wind, the heavy rain, field conditions get bad. It gets dangerous for the players. You want your Giant players to stay healthy, folks. And, of course, more importantly, thunder and lightning, metal bleachers, bad combination. That's a bad combination. So keep an eye on the weather. We'll see what happens for this weekend.
We've been outside multiple times where a passing storm has come through, and it's a rush to the indoor facility.
And then sometimes
they
come back out, too, if the weather clears. But, yes, it is. Sometimes it happens quick. You know how it is in the summer with these thunderstorms. It rolls in and rolls out pretty quick.
It's nice to see that you've been studying up on the weather patterns. I thought maybe you'd throw in the term jet stream at one point during BBK. I'm just a little disappointed we didn't get that
Of breakdown. You want to keep an eye on the barometer.
Yes.
As the barometer falls, the pressure systems come through, that's when you have the chance of rain.
It's nice to see that you passed earth science at one point during the course of your tenure.
Also, college, energy and the environment.
Really? Oh, that must have been a stunning course.
It was actually fairly informative.
Syllabus was pretty long, or you don't recall.
All right, folks. 201-939-4513. Giant fans are psyched that camp is coming. So we're going to take your calls for the next 20 minutes or so until we have Ray Fittipaldo, who covers the Steelers. We'll preview that matchup in the second half of the show. Let's go to Phil in Montclair. He's going to lead us off on line number one on Giants.com. Phil, thanks so much for calling in. How are you today?
What's going on, bro? What's up, man?
What's up, man?
Doing well, Phil.
Doing
well. How's things with you?
All right. I don't want to be, I don't want to, sound like I'm harping, John, because sometimes, but the lines is just bothering me. That's the only thing. I'm confident about everything. I don't feel comfortable with that right side of the line. I think that's the only thing that could really hold us back to shit.
Well, look, Phil, I think of the guys that you know are going to be playing, depending on where you're at, I think you're pretty comfortable with your running backs. You know you have a good combination. Obviously, Eli Manning, Odell Beckham. You hope Cruz is healthy. If not, you have Sterling Shepard. That's great. You have two tight ends that played starting snaps the last 2 years. Phil, what was that? Are you in a haunted mansion or something? What the hell was that?
He's juggling.
Yeah, seriously. But, yeah, Phil, look, I think if you want to pinpoint something to keep an eye on that could become problematic, that's the side you look at. And I think the other thing you want to look at is the offensive line, too. And I think this is just as important, to be quite honest with you. You want to see Ereck Flowers stay healthy. He battled that high ankle sprain all year last year, and I think it affected his performance, in my opinion. So you want to see him stay healthy, and you want to see him be a little bit more consistent, too.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, the Jerry Newhouse thing just bothers me. I'm telling you, I'm scared, but honestly.
Well, Phil, you know what, Phil? I want to try to put you at ease a little bit. I don't have Paul Dottino here to feed into the hysteria. So Lance and I will try to level it out a little bit. In terms of John Jerry, as a pass protector at right guard, he's actually very, very good. And if you he's a very good pass protector.
But him and Newhouse together, just it just it just turns out to bad news to me. I mean, I don't know what to say, but I think John Jerry can be capable. Come in, somebody's tired, play a couple plays. I think he's really good there if you had him off your bench. But to have him in Newhouse starting is, for a second year in a row, I don't think that's gonna work.
Well, Phil, keep in mind, we haven't started training camp yet, and as McAdoo has said on multiple occasions, the line has not been solidified yet. Now, that doesn't mean that Newhouse and Jerry are not going to win those positions, but, you know, we're going to see some mixing and matching during the course of camp. I think Bobby Hart's going to get his opportunities, and perhaps some of the other veterans, like a Byron Stingley, who's on the roster, could get some looks, too. And once again, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but, you know, on paper right now, those are the five that are penciled in. What happens weeks later could be very different than what we see right now.
And, Phil, again, for that right side, I think Jerry's fine as a pass protector. I think you worry about running in that direction. Both guys did not grade out well run blocking last year, according to Pro Football Focus, if you take that stuff seriously. And Newhouse gave up a certain amount of pressures and pass rushes. I get that. But if you think of it this way, did those two players come up with some issues last year over the course of the year? Sure. But I don't think there were many games where that right side of the offensive line played poorly to the point where it short-circuited the whole offense. I mean, I think they were able to do what they wanted to do even with those two guys over there. So while you would like it to be better, sure, I think the offense is going to be able to function.
Hey, John, let me ask you one more question.
Yeah.
What was the reason behind Reese not going to sign a right tackle? They had plenty of money, right?
Nah, look, he tried. I mean, if you take a look at some of the reports, and Lance and I can't confirm who was coming in here or not, but if you look at some of the reports over the year, over the course of the offseason, Donald Penn, who eventually re-signed with the Raiders, was here. There was one other offensive tackle that showed
Russell
that they talked to. Right, thank you.
I was thinking about Mitchell Schwartz. He didn't get a big contract. He was somebody's size.
Yeah, he did.
Still young.
Mitchell Schwartz got a nice contract.
Yeah, but it wasn't 11 or 12 million dollars a year, though, what's the guy, Asimili and some of the other guys?
You're talking
like 8 million.
Well, Mitchell Schwartz signed with the Chiefs after he spent some time with the Browns. I mean, I'd have to look up the numbers, but remember, he was one of the first guys to go off the board. Mitchell Schwartz signed very early in free agency, Paul. Let's not forget about that.
It's about 5 for just under 40, like 5 for 38.
The other guys that we had mentioned, they were on the market for a
reasonable contract. You said 5 for 40?
I think it was 5 for 38, something like that.
The Giants could afford that, right?
Well, but remember, here's the other side of things, and I say this about every free agent, and especially with Russell Okung, I'll use him. Once again, it was pure speculation. There was a lot of chatter. He didn't have any interest playing on the right side. He was looking for a left-side opportunity. Now, I know Mitchell Schwartz by trade is a right tackle, but, you know, sometimes the player doesn't want to come to the team. It's not that the team has no interest in the player, Paul. You have to keep in mind, when they meet, you know, he may have found that Kansas City was just a bit more attractive. I don't know the mindset of every single player, but I think when the label and the narrative becomes the team didn't do its due diligence to go after players is a little misleading when you don't know the mindset of the player and the agent who is representing the player.
Well, I mean, I agree with you on that, but do we know? I mean, do you guys know? Did they try to go after?
I don't know of anything. I haven't heard anything specific in terms of, you know, who exactly they were going after. Like I said, the Okung and the Penn that John threw out, you know, that was all media reports. The Giants never publicly tell you, you know, hey, we met with so-and-so 5 days ago, and, you know, this is how the conversation went. It's just basically whatever the media is reporting.
We appreciate it.
Real quick, if the Giants had made the trade for Monroe, would he retire?
That's a really good question.
I think he was probably good.
I mean, honestly, Phil, and thanks for the call. We appreciate it. You know, that's a good question. I mean, I would think, yeah. I mean, he cited health reasons.
And family reasons, too.
And family to retire, so I would assume he would have regardless, right?
I mean, I don't know if it was so much that he wasn't getting opportunities, and it was that perhaps he was irritated that maybe the opportunities weren't coming on the left side. I think he just came to the realization. Yeah. And think about this. You know, there's a number of players that are speculated that could retire today who are also in that age 30 or lower barometer. And ESPN's Adam Schefter actually tweeted out an interesting statistic that about 14 guys this year who are 30 or younger have retired from the NFL. So, you know, you put two and two together, somewhat of a trend, somewhat of a theme, which doesn't have anything to do with whether or not the opportunities are there to continue to play, it's a personal reason.
Yeah, I don't blame these guys if after your second contract you want to call quits. I mean, you know, you get your rookie deal, which depending on where you're drafted can be very good money or it can be, you know, okay money. But once you sign that second contract and you play through it, if you don't want to play into your mid to low, you know, low to mid-30s, I get that. This is a young man's game, man. It's very hard to play into your mid-30s. It really is. It doesn't happen very often unless you're like a quarterback.
Well, and especially if you get hurt early in your career and the wear and tear piles up, that's what happens. And a lot of these other players in this day and age, you know, they have other interests too, John, depending on, you know, what happened even before they arrived at the NFL. For example, you know, Walter Thurmond, who was with the Giants not too long ago, he also called it quits. And you look at him, young, very productive. He was coming off a great year with the Philadelphia Eagles when he moved from corner to safety. However, he was at the point in his life where he wanted to pursue other interests. You know, it's obviously in the eye of the beholder. Everybody's going to have a different perspective.
Marco, Connecticut. He's up next on Big Blue Kickoff on Line 3. What's going on, Marco? How are you, pal?
Oh, Lance and John, I'm so pumped up. We're about to start. I can't wait.
We're getting going, man. It's good to hear from you, Marco. How are you?
Thanks, guys. I'm doing great. Couple things, just basically from last week, I was listening. I compliment on the Ernie Accorsi interview. I thought it was unreal.
Thank you.
Just really, really didn't want it to end. I loved it, and yeah, props to you guys. Is there any chance that you think before that Ring of Honor ceremony that maybe Coach Coughlin gets on too, or is that maybe not so easy?
I think there's a better – leave it this way, Marco. I think there's a better chance you'll hear from Coach Coughlin on the radio pregame show prior to that Monday night game than you would hear from him in a long-form interview on this show. You never know. We'll try.
Okay.
But, I'm, you know, Coach isn't necessarily the chattiest guy sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing I liked about what Ernie Accorsi was talking about, I loved the – you know, when he talked about Jerry Reese, because, you know, Jerry's also a very quiet guy. You don't really know too much about him, but how he came up, you know, that really, you know, ready for the job, but a very serious guy about it, and how he was involved in the draft leading up to that. And last week, Lance, I think you were on when you interviewed the Ravens beat reporter.
Correct. That was Paul and I.
Paul, yeah. And you asked a question about Will Hill getting off. And that also made me feel better. I didn't blame Jerry Reese or the Giants when they decided to let him go. But to hear that some of those troubles followed him in Baltimore, too, you know, that just goes to say that the Giants didn't – they did let some talent go there, but they understood that I just want to say I'm happy with the choice Jerry made. Let's just say that. And to hear it validated a little bit more made me feel better, okay? Lance called last week talking about some of the regular season games that have been big turning points for the franchise. And when he talked about that, I wanted to hear what you guys thought about 2011 Giants-Jets, Victor Cruz going 100 yards in the other direction, and how that kind of catapulted the Giants going to the Super Bowl that year.
Yeah, Marco, you know, that was the big one. But to me, the bigger one that year was the Jason Pierre-Paul Dallas blocked field goal game. To me, that was the bigger game that year. People remember the Jet game, and yet the Giants lose to the Jets in that spot. They're in a lot of trouble. But the other game's in the division. It has an impact on tiebreakers, and if the Giants lose that game to Dallas, that Jet game doesn't mean nearly as much as it does after the Giants beat Dallas in that game. So I was going to bring up that Jet game, but I thought putting more than one regular season game in from the same year might be, you know, maybe not in the spirit of the type of thing we were talking about. But, yeah, obviously that Jet game. And that first quarter, if people remember, the Giants' offense wasn't doing anything. They weren't doing a damn thing until Cruz caught that ball and ran 80 yards or whatever it was to, you know, score that touchdown.
Right. Well, that's true. That's true. The Pierre-Paul one, especially being in division.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll jump off after this. My question is about the wide receivers, and I know that we're going to hear a lot of these names, the younger players as camp kicks off. Roger Lewis, Poe, Doble, I'm just curious about these guys. I think Doble, if you guys can look into this, I think there's each team has an exception on their practice squad that they can carry an extra player if it's a player like a foreign player. So Doble might fit a criteria where he doesn't even take up a practice squad spot. There's an additional position that each team has. I don't know if you guys would look into that.
I can check that.
Well, I know that in the new practice squad rules, there's also two players that you can designate on the practice squad that could have played perhaps 2 years in the league. That they also recently added. And you are correct about foreign players. I just want to get the wording down so obviously it's clear for the audience. But they did make a tweak with respect to that. But I don't know if that's an exception, Marco. I think that perhaps still may count against the 10-man practice squad. It's just you're saying that, you know, the 10-man practice squad has a little bit more versatility now, whereas in the past it was usually, you know, a guy that just walked into the league. Now, if a guy has 2 years in the league, X amount of games, he's still eligible to be moved on the practice squad, which obviously was something that was new that was brought to the forefront.
We got
to
run, Marco.
All right, guys, Paul and Roger Lewis. I don't know anything about them. Quick scouting report so the fans understand a little bit about these guys.
Okay, appreciate it, Marco. I would say they're both, I'd say, medium size for wide receivers. They're about 6 foot, just about over 200 pounds or so. Lewis obviously has some off-the-field issues coming in from Bowling Green. Would have been drafted probably without those issues, so I think he probably has a little bit of a higher ceiling than Poe, and I think he's probably a little quicker.
Poe's got a little bit more size. Yep. He's 6'3". Poe came from Cal, so he
was right. Poe is 6'3". You're right about that.
Yeah, Poe from the Pac-12, if you want to look at it, the competition that he went up against. But remember, it all depends on how it's going to translate to the football field. I thought Lewis had the more impressive offseason period.
Agreed.
Right? I would say he stood out a little bit more. That doesn't mean that Poe doesn't have nearly as much upside, but Lewis, to me, I think has the edge in the battle right now based on the work he's done so far.
All right, I want to squeeze in these three calls before we get to Ray at 12:30. Mark in Florida's up next. Mark, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, Mark.
It's Mark from Deerfield. I mean, I haven't been calling for a long time because I never had a chance to get in.
Yep, good to hear from you.
I'm Jason's uncle.
Yep.
And as a matter of fact, last week I just got back from Haiti.
Very
and
nice.
He was over there. Yeah, I mean he was down there doing some charity work. Then everything went well. And he's still working out over there too. So he's not. You know, it looks good. It looks fit. Yeah. I mean, what I wanted to say though, I was looking at the 2007 draft, and this year draft, and I don't know if history going to repeat himself. I mean like itself and everything. But Jerry just did the same thing. If you look at it, just take a look at the 2007 draft, and the same thing. I mean, the first pick, Aaron Ross, like the corner. The second pick,
Steve Smith.
Yeah.
We had eight picked in 2007. And 2016, we got six picked. But, like, besides the tackle and the kicker, whatever his name is, he's still playing. I mean, that pitch kicker, whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm.
Besides those two guys, I mean, everything else is just the same.
Yeah, you know what? You make a good point. You pick a corner in the first round. You get the wide receiver in the second, a tight end on the third day, safety in the second half of the draft, and a running back in the second half of the draft. So you're right. There are some similarities in that way to what the Giants did in 07. I agree with you.
It's weird. I mean, it looks like the history is going to repeat himself, because I remember like that year we went to the Super Bowl and rookies actually, help out. I mean, I'm hoping that we get to keep them, not like, you know, a year or two, like Steve Smith got hurt and never came back and everything, and Aaron Ross had only one or two good years, that's it. I'm just hoping that those guys just stay in New York and just produce for a long time to come, you know what I mean?
No, absolutely.
But everything else was like the same. It just baffles my mind, though. It's just like, wow. This is so weird. I mean, just what do you guys think?
Now, Mark, look, I think you make a good point, and I think you're right. You want to have that immediate impact, but I think you would also like to have more longevity out of this class than he had out of the class in 2007 because of the Steve Smith injury. Aaron Ross had the hamstring problems. Kevin Boss had the concussion. So you had limited in terms of, you know, year service from those guys off that draft. But the immediate impact was great. Mark, thanks for the call, man. It's good to hear from you, pal.
All right. All right.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Max in New York City. Max, you're on line four. You're up next. What's up, buddy?
What's up, Dad? It's good to talk to you.
Thanks, Max.
Hey, I was wondering, I'm a big D-line guy. I prefer, you know, that's how I would build a defense from a D-line up. And I have a question for you. Do you think that this D-line might find itself being a little too top-heavy? You have the flashy names like Pierre, Paul, and Vernon, and Hankins will give you what he did. But Harrison, I don't even think, had two sacks last year. Or if he did, he didn't have much over
that.
Yeah,
but he's never
and
been
And
you going...
hope someone like Bromley comes in. Well, I heard Odigi's out was more of a run stuffer. He might not give you a lot. Are you afraid that it might only, you know, you can get a lot from two, three guys, but can you get that, you know, the 50 number, if you agree, is kind of the number you want to get to be one of the top pass rushers, 50 sacks. And I don't know if they can do that with three guys.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you necessarily need 50 sacks to get into the playoffs and be considered a
good team. If you want to be top three in terms of pressure, 50 is around where you want to get. But you know, if you get 45,
yeah,
you push
when you have two rookie safeties or second-year safety and a rookie safety, I think you want to be around 50.
Well, you want
I think they'd like to be around 50.
But see, the way that I look at it is I'm not so caught up when I look at this defensive line that the sacks need to be there. I think there needs to be a drastic improvement in stopping the run. Because if you look at last season, the Giants are very good at stopping the run early in the year. They were at one point ranked number one in the NFL. Then all of a sudden they dipped, and that coincided with some of the struggles and some of the losses.
Hankins got hurt was a part
correct.
Of that, too.
But that's more of a reason why I think the run stopping needs to be consistent, mm-hmm. Max, to piggyback off of your point. And, you know, you brought up Damon Harrison. He's never been known for getting to the quarterback.
Well, but I think Max's point is a good one. Where are you getting sacks once you're past Jason Pierre-Paul?
Right. When you look at
Double O is an intriguing guy to throw out there to see if he can become that pass rusher.
He didn't get a lot of sacks in college,
though. I'm not saying there's the track record, but that would be a name that I would look towards for perhaps.
And this is the point I've made a lot of thing in the offseason. I think it kind of backs up Max's point. Were you getting interior pass rush? And I think you mentioned Odigizuwa on third down can go inside. You know, Bromley, you think, can do it. He hasn't proven he can do it yet. You know, Hankins didn't have any sacks until he got hurt last year. Snacks, as you mentioned, isn't a sacks guy.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Spagnuolo's scheme, blitzing linebackers, maybe Devon Kennard can give you six or seven sacks as a blitzer. Maybe, you know, you can blitz a corner out of the slot,
possible.
Something like that. So I think, Max, that's where you're going to get your depth. I think it's the way Spagnuolo uses his scheme. And he'll put other guys in position to help them get those sacks to assist JPP and Vernon.
Well, and I think probably we could see also some lineups where, you know, he puts three defensive ends on the field at the
like
same
Ola.
Time. Yeah. So, you know, when you have that, you have a little bit more versatility, and that could lead to a better pass rush. Kerry Wynn is another guy who perhaps could see some reps on the interior depending on the breakdown and the logistics.
All right, Max, we got to run, pal. Thank you.
Thanks,
all right, let's go to Len in Maryland. We'll get him in before our guest. Len, thanks for calling in, pal. How are you?
Yeah, how you doing, guys? Hey, listen, first off, great off-season coverage. Informative, entertaining, you know, very good.
We appreciate
and
that.
Really appreciate it. The whole crew, everybody was really good.
Well, thank you.
The tenor of my calls is probably going to start getting a little more serious. I mean, it's almost game time here.
Yes, of course.
And hopefully we got a, you know, sense of urgency out there. It's been a long time. It's just time to get back to the playoffs. I think you got to go back more than 35 years to find a four-year period where we didn't make the playoffs. So, you know, come on, guys. It's just time. It's just time to get going on this thing. And
absolutely.
I'm optimistic. And listen, let me ask you a quick question about the pup list. I know we haven't announced one way or the other yet. The Ravens have. The Ravens announced early. Which is kind of interesting. I'm not sure why they did that, but they announced over the weekend they've got three or four guys. Of course, they got beat up pretty badly last year, so they've got three or four guys. But we haven't announced yet. I guess that's a question more than anything else. Have you heard anything?
Well, guys have to go through their normal routines when they report on Thursday, the physicals and everything.
Okay.
I think it'd be a little premature to put anybody on pup at this point.
Are the Ravens playing the whole thing game with the Packers?
No, that's the Packers and the Colts,
Packers-Colts, okay.
Yeah. The Ravens did announce that they have a number of guys, but keep in mind the number of those players that they listed, Len, you know, had off-season surgery.
Oh, yes.
Where they
serious,
were not necessarily
injury.
Projected to perhaps return in a timely fashion for the start of training camp. If you look at the Giants, most of the players players that underwent surgery, they happened during the course of the season, that they have since been fully recovered prior to the start of training.
Hey, Len, do me a favor. Give me one more point because our guest is on the line. I want to get to him, okay?
Okay, listen, that was it. Thanks
okay.
for the coverage.
Perfect.
And let's get serious and make the playoffs.
You got it. Appreciate
Thank
the call.
Thank you, Len.
Thanks
Appreciate
so much.
It, my
Thanks,
man.
Guy.
That's Len in Maryland. And good job by the callers. Now we get to our guests as we continue previewing the Giants' opponents this season. And we're getting into December. And that means it's time to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers with Ray Fittipaldo from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Ray, you're on with John Schmoke and Lance Meadow here in East Rutherford, New Jersey on Giants.com. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you on this lovely summer afternoon?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
We're doing great, and the grind is going to begin later on this week. Camp starts, and all of our lives pretty much end until 2017. So, Ray, what's the feel here? You know, the Steelers dealt with so many injuries last year. They still made, you know, some real headway in the playoffs. They beat the Cincinnati Bengals in that game that, you know, was crazy down to the wire. What are the expectations? Is it Super Bowl or bust right now in Pittsburgh for the Steelers this year?
Yeah, I actually read a piece that was in our paper at PostGazette.com on Sunday just about that very subject. They felt like they were the better team in Denver last year, if not for a fourth-quarter fumble by their third-string running back who had to play because Le'Veon Bell and D'Angelo Williams were injured. And not to even mention that all-pro receiver Antonio Brown missed that game due to a concussion sustained in that playoff game at Cincinnati. They felt like they were the better team, even with all of those key guys. So it's definitely Super Bowl or bust this year. And I say that even knowing the news that happened on Friday with Le'Veon Bell and the report that he's going to miss four games to start the season due to a missed drug test, even if he does miss those four games, they could just tread water and get to 2-2 or 3-1. I still think they'll be in great shape along with the Patriots to be a top seed in the AFC. I think they're that good this year.
Well, right, I would agree with you. I think right now on paper they certainly have plenty of depth. You brought up the speculation surrounding Bell, and, you know, it's almost like deja vu all over again for the Steelers, Ray, because he missed the first two games last season. D'Angelo Williams turned out to be a good signing, was very productive in those two games. So with that being said, when you look at what's behind Bell this year, Williams is back. With the fact that it seems that they have some depth, how good of shape are they in that Bell, if he does miss four games, they perhaps have to buy themselves some time?
Well, they're in great shape if D'Angelo Williams can stay healthy. I know that's a big if. But D'Angelo Williams was great last year, 907 yards, 11 touchdowns. It was his best season in both categories, I think, since the 2009 season. And, you know, he's 33 years old, but he's a guy who doesn't have a lot of tread on his tires. He sort of split time down in Carolina with Jonathan Stewart for all those years. And if he can stay healthy, like I said, they'll be fine. If not, you know, Fitzgerald Toussaint is their third-string guy. He's the guy who unfortunately fumbled for the Steelers early in the fourth quarter of that game at Denver last January. They're okay with him. You know, I think the hope with him is that, you know, he'll spell Williams and play 8 or 10 snaps a game. But after that, you know, they got a guy by the name of Darrell Richardson who's been with the Rams in the past. He has some NFL experience, and the rest of the guys are just guys on a tryout basis who are, you know, going to keep the seat warm and take a lot of snaps during the preseason. But there's no one else besides Williams and Toussaint who have a lot of NFL experience.
Obviously, Ben Roethlisberger had a couple off-the-field issues earlier in his career, but in terms of his on-the-field play, you know, despite the fact that he has missed some games with injuries, it's very similar, I think, to the situation the Giants have with Eli Manning. So many things can go wrong around the quarterback, but if Ben Roethlisberger's on the field, the same way if Eli Manning's on the field, the Steelers have a chance to win. How much of a rock has he really been for that franchise the last few years with so many injuries and moving parts around him, and frankly, a defense that they've been trying to rebuild a little bit on the run?
Yeah, I mean, let's go back to that playoff game in Denver last year. No Le'Veon Bell, no D'Angelo Williams, no Antonio Brown. Still, they outgained the Broncos in that game. All of a sudden, Martavis Bryant, who won't play this year because of a drug suspension. You know, Bryant was a star in that game, both running the ball and big plays in the passing game. He made use of Stanley Coates in that game, 2 catches for 61 yards. Darius Hayward-Bey had a nice game. I think he had two catches and 65 yards in that game. So that is the type of guy he's going to make the most of what's around him. Obviously, I think he's a Pro Bowl, All-Pro type of player, even though he's never been an All-Pro in his life because of Grady and some of the other great QBs. He's an All-Pro type of player when he has the elite talent around him, but he's still a really, really good quarterback, even when there's, you know, just some solid guys and some young guys around him. So if he stays healthy, they're going to have a chance no matter what. Missed four games last year with a knee injury and banged up in some other games too. But as long as he's okay, the Steelers are going to be right there in the AFC, I think.
Talking with Ray Fittipaldo, who covers the Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Ray, you mentioned that Bryant's out for the season due to that suspension, and you know they have a few other options. Hayward Bey, who really had a career year last year, considering his ups and downs in the early stages of his career. They brought him back. But, you know, one guy to me that jumps off the page when you look at the Steelers receiving corps is Marcus Wheaton. How critical of a year is this for him, considering Bryant is not in the picture?
Well, it's huge for him because it's a contract year. It's the last year of his rookie deal. And quite honestly, when they've counted on Marcus Wheaton to be the go-to number two receiver opposite Antonio Brown in the past, he hasn't excelled. Marcus Wheaton has been at his best when Martavis Bryant is alongside and Bryant and Brown could take a lot of pressure off. And, you know, Wheaton's a solid guy. He'll get open. He'll make some catches. But when they needed him to step up, and, you know, when other teams double-covering Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant wasn't dressing, he didn't always come through. That's why I think Sammy Coates is going to be huge for this team. The Steelers knew Bryant had some drug issues back in the spring of 2015, so he invested a third-round pick in Coates. He was pretty much a Bryant clone. He's big, he's fast, and we'll see if he can make the play that Bryant did. But the Steelers drafted knowing that there were some issues with Bryant, and Coates was that guy. And if Coates can take a big step forward this year, I think he might even be more important than a guy like Marcus Wheaton.
You know, looking at the Steeler offensive line, every time I watch the Steeler game, it looks like Ben Roethlisberger is picking himself up off the turf. But if you look at all the metrics and you look at the names, by all accounts, the Steelers' offensive line is pretty strong. So is all that contact Ben Roethlisberger takes simply a product of him always trying to hold the ball and make a play, even when maybe something isn't there?
Well, they've tried to coach him out of that. That was his calling card under Bruce Arians, and it's one of the reasons Bruce Arians got let go. The Steelers argue they didn't fire him and, you know, all that stuff. But they wanted a guy who was going to get the ball out of his hand, and that's what Todd Haley has done for the most part. If you think back to that Cincinnati playoff game last year, the reason that Ben Roethlisberger had to exit that game and the reason the Bengals almost made a comeback is because he held onto the ball too long. And Vontaze Burfict finally got to him and fell on top of him. So I think the Steelers will harp on that this year. Their offensive line is really good, especially with Marquise Pouncey coming back. He's a former All-Pro at center. You got All-Pro David DeCastro at right guard. And you got a Marcus Gilbert who right tackle, who arguably could have made the Pro Bowl last year. So they're really good along the offensive line. And if Ben, if he could take the coaching that's being given to him by Todd Haley and Randy Fietner, the quarterback's coach, if he gets rid of the ball on time, there shouldn't be a lot of issues with his pass pro.
Well, a position that could help with the offensive line, Ray, is the tight end position, and Heath Miller has really been a staple for the Steelers for so many years. He decides to retire, so now they're going to take a chance on Antonio Gates' backup from San Diego, Ladarius Green. You know, how much of a change is that going to be for Ben Roethlisberger, and, you know, how much of a big opportunity is this for Green now that he doesn't really have to share the platform with another notable tight end?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when San Diego decided to re-sign Gates and not Green last year, that sort of opened some eyes. And, you know, I'm sure the Steelers did some digging and, you know, they feel like Green can be the guy to replace Heath Miller. But there's a lot of unknowns there. He had some injury problems in San Diego, couldn't always stay on the field. But there's also a lot of untapped potential there. With Heath Miller, he was Roethlisberger's security blanket. He was reliable over the middle. He wasn't going to run by people or break many tackles at this point in his career, especially the last few years. He had really slowed down. And with Darius Green, you have a guy who runs a sub 4.5 40. He's 6'6". He's a big target, so he's going to be one of these newfangled tight ends that, you know, populate the league now, and the Steelers really haven't had one, and it's going to be interesting to see how Todd Haley implements him within, you know, the Steelers offense. I can envision him running down the seam and being a big play guy, much in the way Martavis Bryant was last year. They're not going to use him like they did Heath Miller. You know, they're going to play to his strengths, and obviously he wasn't brought here to block. You know, the Steelers were one of the last holdout teams to have a true dual threat tight end, Heath Miller. They just don't grow on trees anymore. So
yeah.
They're going to play to his strengths, and they're going to throw the ball down the field to him, I think.
Ray Fittipaldo, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And Ray, one of the guys that kind of got pushed aside because of these new school tight ends is as old school of a guy as you can get, and that's Will Johnson, who's now a member of the Giants. Not sure how much you interacted with Will in Pittsburgh. Can you give Giant fans a feel for what they're getting with Will Johnson, who's going to be competing for that kind of fullback tight end H-back role here with the Giants?
Yeah, great guy, and you know, really high character person. Will was with the Steelers for 4 years. I really enjoyed covering him. Great guy in the locker room for all of your New York and New Jersey reporters up there too. He's really good in his role. He can catch the ball a little bit from the H back and fullback position. The Steelers like to use him a lot on counters with Le'Veon Bell when they went three tights. So he's just a really reliable, nice player to have on your football team. They didn't play him a bunch all the time. You know, they sort of pick their games when they would use him. But, you know, he averaged maybe 15, 20 snaps per game. And when they put him in there, he never disappointed. He's a nice weapon to have on offense, especially if you like to run the football.
Well, he's going to have some battle with incumbent Nikita Whitlock at the fullback position this offseason. And Whitlock, who actually plays defense, too, for the Giants. And that brings me to the Steelers' defense, Ray. They really have had a lot of turnover on this roster this offseason, specifically in the secondary. A lot of changes in terms of personnel, investing in some young guys atop the draft. What's this secondary look like? And were the changes now taking this defense overall in a positive direction, do you think?
Well, they're hoping the young guys can be better than the old guys. I mean, they're basically switching out three veterans and Will Allen, the strong safety, who was hitting 34. They did not re-sign him. Antoine Blake, not quite as old. He's maybe 27, 28 years old. But they had him for a couple of years. He started all 16 games last year and both playoff games, and they felt like they can do better. So they have Ross Cockrell in his place now, and he's going to try to hold off first-round pick Artie Jones. And also they decided to not bring back their slot corner, Brandon Boykin, and they're going to go with second-year pro Cinquez Golson, a former second-round pick who missed all of last season with an injury. So when you look at it on paper, you're sort of scratching your head. You're thinking, boy, can they be better with all these new guys having to learn the ropes? I just think the Steelers are banking on the young guys, the young legs, the playmaking ability. Eventually these guys are going to get in the swing of things with the defense, and they're going to be better than the guys that they replaced. I'm just wondering, as we sit here, you know, 6 weeks from the season, how long it's going to take for those guys to get up to speed. That's a big thing in the Steelers' defense. It's a complicated defense. The young guys have to learn it. I think once they learn it, they'll be okay. That's a big question mark going into the season.
Well, and I'm sure the Steelers would also like for them to get some help from the pass rush so those guys back there don't have to cover for a whole lot of time. And it seems like the Steelers have, you know, I realize James Harrison still has the team, but they're trying to replace that elite-level James Harrison that was there the last time they really challenged for the Super Bowl. And, you know, they drafted Jarvis Jones. They bring in Bud Dupree. How's that pass rush coming along? Have they found those guys that can stand up off the edge in the 3-4 and then put their hand in the dirt when they go to nickel and dime? What's the status of the Steelers' pass rush right now?
Well, they're hoping last year's first-round pick, Bud Dupree, can develop into that. They were hoping 2013 first-round pick Jarvis Jones would develop into that, and they decided not to pick up his fifth-year option, so that obviously tells you what they think of Jarvis Jones. He splits time with James Harrison. He has 5 sacks over his first 3 NFL seasons. If it hasn't happened so far, it's probably not going to happen. So what the Steelers have done, they basically tricked it up a little bit. They get a lot of their pressure from scheme. They were actually 3rd in the NFL last year with 48 sacks.
Wow.
It just didn't happen to come from the outside linebackers. They got the best 2, 3, 4 defensive ends, the best combo of 3, 4 ends in the league, and Stephon Tuitt and Cam Hayward. You will not find a better 3-4 duo in the league. Cam Hayward's on the verge of being a Pro Bowl or an All-Pro, and Stephon Tuitt, who's out of Notre Dame, going into his third year, isn't far behind. So they get a lot from their ends, and, you know, Keith Butler, he won under Dick LeBeau, and Dick LeBeau was among the best ever at scheming things up and getting pressure on quarterbacks, and they did a great job in that regard this year. The only question I have this year is everybody's seen Keith Butler for a year now. They know what he likes to do. Can he duplicate that in year two if his outside linebackers don't come through?
Talking with Ray Fittipaldo, who covers the Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Big picture here, Ray, when you look at the makeup of the AFC North, one of the deepest divisions in football, usually it's always a battle royale between at least three of the four teams. You know, where would you rank the outlook of this division as they head into training camp? Cincinnati's had a lot of turnover. They lose two top wide receivers. They've had some changes on defense. Baltimore banged up last year. You know, where do you rank these three teams right now as they make their way into the 2016 season?
Yeah, even with all the problems the Steelers have had with Bryant and Bell, I still think the Steelers are number one. I think Cincinnati's a close two. Something to watch for there. They lost Hugh Jackson, their offensive coordinator. I think he meant a lot to that offense, and specifically to Andy Dalton. So that'll be something to watch. But I still think they'll be right there. And I think Baltimore, I don't think they're as good as they have been in the recent past, obviously coming off 5-11 season, but I don't think they're going to be 5-11 again. I think they'll be 7-9, 8-8, maybe 9-7. So I think you got those three teams. I think Cleveland will be terrible again. And, you know, I think Pittsburgh's probably the team to beat right now, even though they have some issues to work through themselves.
I know this is probably a tough question to answer today, but I know that stadium that you guys have down in Pittsburgh is shared by the college team, the high school teams playing there as well. Should we expect pretty rough field conditions when the Giants show up at the beginning of December, just as that high school season's ending, just as the college season is ending?
Well, I don't have the schedule right in front of me, guys, but you guys can look at this. They resod that field twice a year.
Okay.
They'll resod that probably sometime in October, and then generally, if Pitt plays a Thanksgiving week game, the local high school teams play right after that, their championships. So they'll do it right again late November, early December. So I think whenever the Giants come in, as long as things go as planned, they should have a nice surface to play on. I know it's been an issue in the past, but, you know, they've been criticized enough that they've gone ahead and spent that money on resodding here the last couple of years. And honestly, I don't remember too many other teams complaining about it in the last few years.
Well, Ray, I was going to say, based on your calendar with the sodding, the Giants come to town December 4th, so perhaps that will work in favor of the Giants, and that'll be the second progress of the field by the time they visit. Yeah.
Ray, great stuff.
Hopefully it's not after the Giants game.
Yeah, absolutely. Ray, great stuff. We appreciate the time, and we'll see you in the beginning of December, my friend.
Thanks, Ray.
All right, thanks for having me on.
That's Ray Fittipaldo from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Does a great job covering the Steelers, giving us the insight on that matchup. That's really one of the more exciting matchups for me. You don't see the Giants play the Steelers much, once every 4 years to be precise, and it's always fun going to Pittsburgh, so that should be a good time.
Well, and there's been a lot of wild matchups between these two teams in recent history. I remember the last time they went to Pittsburgh, the bad snap.
Yep, that was Harrison. When James Harrison had to take over as a long snapper because the Steelers long snapper got hurt in that game.
Correct, and then the last time they met here, the area was recovering from Sandy.
That's right.
And there was questions about whether or not that game was going to be
moved. I forgot about that. That's right.
And if memory serves me correct, Giants had the lead for a good portion of that game. Pittsburgh put together a fourth-quarter comeback. Roethlisberger got a short pass, I believe, that turned into a touchdown, and then Pittsburgh went on to rally. So a lot of close affairs. Plus, let's not forget the history between both of these teams. Both of these franchises are quite close, given the family ties as well. So it should be probably right underneath the Green Bay game, I think, in terms of maybe hype and build-up in non-divisional
games. I like Minnesota. New stadium Monday night. I'm excited for Minnesota.
Just
by the way, if you guys want to get in real quick, you can give us a call. Last 10 minutes of the show, 201-939-4513. Well, I like Minnesota.
Well, I mean, I think Minnesota's a good team, and clearly you're not going to be complaining because it's no longer outside, so that's probably why you're really looking
for it. Well, I was inside the old stadium,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, the fact that you're now even well-protected.
I'm not Howard
Little
Cross.
Extra layers. No, you don't have to worry about that. But,
or the Tino.
Even though you were inside, though.
It was chilly.
That was a pretty cold day.
It was
from what I recall.
It was chilly.
You could see the smoke in front of your mouth every time you spoke.
Hey, you know me. I'm not one to complain.
No, listen, I love the cold. I'm a summer baby, and I love the cold. I mean, I'm waiting for it to snow already tomorrow. I can only take so much of this 90-degree weather. So, you know, you reporting that it's going down to the 80s is almost like a cool stretch here.
Yeah, well, the way it's been, it certainly is, huh?
Hey, you're frying egg on the sidewalk right now.
And you know what's funny? Like, in the morning, it wasn't that bad. You go out at, like, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm not sure when you were coming to and from Sirius to do your shows over the weekend, but that, like, mid-late afternoon, early evening, when the sun's coming down, it was scorching. Yeah. My dog walked outside, just looked at me like,
he was like,
dude,
the hell with the
what are you doing? I don't want to be out here. He went to the bathroom so fast, so you go back inside, you have no idea.
The shortest walk in the history of dog walking.
He was so happy to get back inside, forget it.
Oh, that's a great story.
201-939-4513. Oh, boy, he got in. Charlie in Portland, Maine.
He opened the door.
How are you, Chuckles?
Hey, guys, how y'all doing?
Doing great, Charlie. How are you?
Hey, it's beautiful up here. It's about 76, so low humidity. So come up. That's in the summer. Hey, guys.
Let me guess. You want to talk about the right side of the offensive line.
Hey, everybody's retiring. We're not going to have too many guys left to try to get. You know, I like the interview with Corsi, and he said something that made so much sense. He said, because you were talking about the O-line and how he put together such a great O-line. Remember he said, O-line is like a fist. And if one finger isn't making that fist, it doesn't work. And guess who that one finger is on the right side of our line that's not allowing us to make a fist. So we have a great offensive line that can work together. And the thing is, I don't know what JR is doing. Is he, opening up an IRA with that $18 million? Is he saving it for a rainy day? He's got the money. We've got to go out and get somebody because it is raining right now. There's a hole in the roof, and it's raining on the right side of our offensive line.
Boy, look at all these analogies and puns he came up with. You know, this is what happens when Eugene Monroe retires. He has too much time on his hands, and the list is shrinking, so Charlie all of a sudden becomes a literary expert. It's amazing.
But there's still some players available, okay?
Like Maya Angelou.
Exactly. You've perused the list, yes.
Well, the list is getting really small right now. But Davis is still the best possibility. He's working out. He wants to return. So I'm hoping Jerry's going to get on the phone and make a deal with San Francisco.
We don't know that.
Play there.
We don't know that for sure,
no,
Charlie.
Charlie knows that. Yes, yeah, he has his sources.
B. Writers from the 49ers I'll send you the article saying that he is working out. He wants to return. And that's what they said. So I believe the 49ers that they're saying that. And he doesn't want to play for the 49ers. So they were saying the best bet for him is New York because he's a New Jersey native. And he also, because of Solari's been with him. So that's one person. The only other thing we can do is bring Beattie back, which we're not going to. We could bring in Jake Long. And the last thing we can do, which would be the best, but we won't, is trade for Joe Thomas because the Browns do want to trade him, and they're going to trade him at some point. So there's some players still left. There is some hope, but the door is getting closed. And just like, of course, he said, if we don't have that fist, it ain't going to work.
Thank you, Charlie.
What can I say?
All right, Charlie.
Hey, guys.
You got it.
Have a good day, man.
Appreciate the phone call.
Just for the record, let's see. This is off NinersWire.USAToday.com. They have video of Anthony Davis working out at Raritan Physical Therapy in New Jersey. And let's see. However, Davis has not filed the proper paperwork for reinstatement.
Still retired.
Niners hold his rights if and when he does come back. He's criticizing the Giants' general manager, the 49ers' general manager. They reached out to Davis's reps and they had no comments. So, don't know.
Well, here's another thing to take into consideration. Given the fact that the Niners own his rights, you know, their mindset is, could they perhaps hold on to him a little bit more and then trade him? Because remember, the draft is done. And the whole point is you want to get draft picks. What's the difference, John, if you acquire a draft pick now or you acquire a draft pick at the trade deadline or you acquire a draft pick after the season? What's the urgency from their standpoint? Number two, okay.
Zero would be the answer.
Yeah. I forget that we're not
on
the audio.
I did this.
Yeah, I'm assuming.
I know it's zero.
The audience can see what John's doing, even though obviously we don't have a camera anymore. So thank you for clarifying
that. No problem.
Went over my head. The other facet is, if you're the Niners, do you want to trade him to a team in your conference?
I think you worry about division. I'm not sure you worry about conference.
All right. Just throwing that out there, you know, about whether that may be the mindset. But I think the first factor is pretty big. About the urgency of getting a draft pick is the same as if you were to get it after the season. I think you got to keep that in mind.
All right, we need to get up on time today, folks. Let's knock off these our final call before we say goodbye. Lloyd in Philly, wrap us up, Lloyd.
The previous caller is exactly the reason why I was calling in.
Sure.
I can't stand that guy.
Lloyd, you ain't the only one.
I know. See, here's the problem. Jerry Reese, and I wanted to ask you guys to do a poll of as many people as you can, I guess, over the next couple of weeks to see what the public feedback is on the job that he's done so far. Because as far as I can tell, he's brought in Logan Thomas, so he's added some depth at quarterback. He drafted Paul Perkins, added depth at running back, brought in another fullback, Will Johnson, drafted a wide receiver. On the defensive line, he signed the best, youngest available guy out there.
Yep.
And added on a defensive tackle in Harrison. Added in a whole bunch of middle linebackers who can also play outside. Drafted a quarterback number one. Added a safety. The only thing that hasn't been added is a brand name right tackle or left tackle. And the only thing I can say about that is, who's to say that once you get that guy in here, he's not going to get injured, because it's happened to us over the last few years. So we can have a championship team on paper where everybody's going to be happy with what's on paper, just like the Eagles did not too long ago. And then nothing happens. You still have to gel. You still have to mesh. And the guys that they did bring in on the offensive line, like Byron Stingley, as far as I'm concerned, that dude is competitive. I don't know a whole lot about him. But just from the things that I've heard from other people who follow him, they say he's pretty good. So he may not be the best name that's out there, but, you know, this dude, he's like a chihuahua with a chew toy, and he will not give it up. Every time he calls in, he's harping on this right tackle position. We have competition there. And it's not to say that Jerry Reese is done with what he's doing, but as far as I'm concerned, he's done an excellent job this offseason. One last thing.
Yeah, real quick, what?
My last name is Harris, and I cannot find a Dwayne Harris jersey for sale when I go to the Giants store.
Lloyd, what I would say, I'm not sure if they make actual Harris jerseys, but you can definitely go online and customize it and get his number and get his name. Or if you go to the team store at the stadium, I believe they can customize jerseys for you on site at the stadium store as well.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks,
I'll
my friend.
Talk to you guys a little bit later next
appreciate
week.
It.
Sounds good. Appreciate the call.
By the way, only because he's always a guest on our show, Dave Dominic just linked this for us. Mickey Spagnuolo from the Cowboys, right? He's been traveling around on a bus with Cowboy staffers and going to some events around where they're going to have training camp. He was involved in a bad accident.
He was on that bus?
Apparently.
I did see that headline.
The word is that he was apparently on it. Everyone on the bus is okay. There might have been some fatalities of the people that were in the van.
Gotcha.
Obviously, bus meets van. The bus is going to win. But apparently, the members of the Cowboys organization and Mickey, if he was in fact on it, the speculation is that he was, because he's been tweeting about going around on a bus. So it's good to hear that they're okay.
Absolutely.
But obviously, hearts and prayers go out to the folks that were in that van. That's terrible.
No,
and they had to close down a whole highway in down in Vegas. So hope everyone's okay.
Yeah, I saw the headline. It said Cowboys bus. I wasn't sure if it was fans, personnel.
Yeah.
But now that you've clarified that, yeah, hopefully everybody's okay with the team, and clearly thoughts and prayers for those who unfortunately were hurt.
Yeah, and unfortunately it looks like some passed away as well. For Lance Menor, I'm John Schmuck. That's Big Blue Kickoff Live. Tomorrow they continue their preview, Lance and Paul, rather Paul and Anita, that is, of the Lions matchup, the final non-division game the Giants have this upcoming year. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live, everybody.
Have a good one.
Talk. We'll see you tomorrow.